Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. Joining me, it sounds like he's slurping on a milkshake, is Jeff Reinbold. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. Jeff, what are you drinking?
I'm not drinking anything, Neil. As a matter of fact, it is so early here. The sun's not up yet, and the coffee shop that I go to in the morning, which opens at 5:30, isn't even open yet. So I'm sitting on the sitting on a bench outside the coffee shop waiting for it to open.
Ouch, that early. Well, we've got Jeff for about 30 minutes. A shorter podcast this week because obviously this is the quiet time of the NFL. Jeff's right in the middle of the season already, so we thought we'd take this opportunity to make an abbreviated podcast. We're going to look at a little bit of news. We're going to talk about some breakout players for 2016 from the AFC, and we'll do the same with the NFC next week. We'll also take some of your questions in the mailbag. Jeff, let's start with the big news. Andrew Luck signs a six-year, $140 million contract that makes him the highest paid player in NFL history. Now, there's been lots of stories breaking down this contract and a bit of criticism that Andrew Luck didn't squeeze the Colts for as much as he could have done. I think the key numbers are that for the first 3 years, Andrew will average $25 million per year. So we've got this first $25 million per year player in the NFL. But if you know Andrew like I know Andrew, and I think you've sort of, I think anyone who kind of follows the NFL gets where he's going and what he's about, I don't think he wanted to squeeze every single cent out of the Indianapolis Colts, and he's quite happy to walk away with what he's got now as the highest paid player in NFL history.
You know, as crazy as it sounds, as you're talking about a contract that is really, really, really amazing, you know, the best contract, best player contract ever in the history of the game, you know, you're right. He could have, had he wanted to, put the screws to him for even more. But, you know, Neil, that's just not him. He's a guy that certainly he's a businessman, and he understands this is his opportunity to take care of himself, his kids, and their kids on into the future. But he also understands that the Colts, in order to win a Super Bowl, you need cap space, and you need to have the ability to have other players. And he's, you know, his personality is not one of me. And you've gotten to know him really well over the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I think it's as crazy as this sounds. It's a $140 million contract really is a win-win contract.
Well, he's not one of those for, you know, he's not going to run out and buy a flashy yacht or, you know, he doesn't even have a mobile phone that is, you know, in the last 10 years in terms of technology, Jeff. He's just not that bothered about stuff like that. He was asked what he'd spend his money on, and he said he might, you know, buy himself one of those ping pong robots that hits the ball back at you. I mean, I don't think he's that bothered about spending his money. Importantly, as you alluded to, how it relates to the rest of the Colts, this is a deal that will see Andrew's salary cap number be in the 20s for the entire length of the deal. It's not going to be any, there's never going to be a $30 million cap hit. It's a manageable one, I think, from the team perspective. And interestingly, just before they signed this deal, and you kind of thought, Andrew, you might want to be a little bit quiet now. You're in negotiations. He was talking about how poorly he had played last year, even before he got hurt, and how he had to improve in 2016. So, I mean, I felt like this was a deal where it was always going to happen. You know, the Colts weren't going to try and lowball. I doubt they lowballed Andrew Luck. I doubt he squeezed them for every cent. I doubt if negotiations ever got touchy at all.
No, and you know, this is really like I say, it's a win-win deal. And when you look at that, you know the cap is going to continue to grow because revenue in the league is going to continue to grow. So it actually gets, when you look at it from that standpoint, it actually gets more friendly, you know, for the Colts as it extends on into the future. So, you know, he is really, really a unique guy in so very many ways. You know, he is not caught up in the whole superstar thing. He's not caught up in the bling bling thing. He's not caught up in all of the stuff that seems to be a trap for, you know, not only football players, but the, you know, the highest paid players in any professional sport. And, you know, he is a very grounded guy and, you know, a really refreshing guy in a lot of ways, because, you know, he is unique in his approach to life and his approach to his work. You know, when you hear him talk, and you know, the fact that he even addresses the fact that he needs to improve. You know, he's not a guy that's going to tell you how great he is. He's going to tell you where he needs to grow as a player, and I think that's a great lesson for a lot of young players.
Yeah, a lot of young players can learn from Andrew Luck, and they will do that this weekend, Jeff. Andrew continues to give back in the UK. He's going to be involved in an NFL on and off the field camp this coming Sunday, July the 10th, and then we're going to have a fan night with him on Monday, July the 11th. So he continues to have an interest in the UK. There was one other story that caught my eye, and it was actually up in your neck of the woods, Jeff. And it was, it's not really NFL related, but I thought it was quite funny. Jerome Carter scores a touchdown. So Chris Carter's son is a wide receiver. He was down with the Colts for a while, wasn't he? And it didn't work out. Now he's back up in Canada. He scores a touchdown for Montreal, and then he sprints to the other sideline to basically stick it to the Ottawa Redblacks and knocks over the coach and gets ejected from the game. I mean, Jeff, this was bizarre because they were losing the game and lost the game. And also, if you are an NFL team looking at Jerome Carter, you're thinking, no thanks, I don't want anything to do with this kid. I mean, did you see it? Were you surprised by it?
Yeah, everybody saw it. And the suspension, he was, you know, suspended yesterday for a game by the commissioner for his actions. When you look at it, obviously, there's, as in most cases, there's fault on both sides. It would have got a red card in soccer for the flop that the head coach from Ottawa did. Fans ought to go to Google and Google it up.
Yeah.
And it is goofy, but he catches a touchdown pass, gets really, the safety just unloads on him as he catches it, and then gets up and taunts the Ottawa sideline as he comes back through the, really, he's on the field of play, but right on the sideline. He bumped into the head coach, and the head coach kind of flopped, and, you know, and then all of a sudden the melee started and went through the bench back to the Montreal bench. Montreal is a unique scenario because of the stadium, the configuration of the stadium. Both teams are on the same sideline, and so it can get heated. You can imagine what it's like when both teams are on the same sideline. And he came through the Ottawa bench, and then punches were thrown, and, you know, it was a nasty scene. And, you know, the sad thing with Deron is Deron's a very talented young player, and he's big and, you know, can catch, he can run, he can do all the things that his father could do. But it's the maturity factor that, you know, continues to haunt him through his career. I mean, the guy, as I said, had a phenomenal game, scored a touchdown on a great catch, but just can't seem to, you know, handle himself at those kinds of moments. And it's frustrating, I'm sure, for the Montreal football team, because now they've lost their best player, you know, for a suspension because he, you know, doesn't have the maturity to you know, be a pro in a moment when you need to be a pro. So it's part of the game, and it's unfortunate because here's a young, talented guy that just doesn't seem to get it about how you handle yourself.
But, Jeff, there are some mitigating circumstances there then, because the way the NFL media reported this story, certainly in America, was that he ran to the opposing team's sideline. If you're telling me, I never knew that they were both on the same sideline, you can understand that that's a little bit different from completely going across the other side of the field then. So it's not quite as bad as it's being painted.
No, and again, I think, but here's a tremendous lesson for young kids. If you're going to be that guy, if you're going to be out there like that, then you're inviting this kind of scrutiny, and you're inviting. The reality of it is, the end zone that he scored the touchdown in, you have to run past their bench to get back to yours. Mm. Now, you don't have to run past their bench, you know, on the sideline like he did, but he was within his right. And then, you know, the coach kind of half stepped in front of him, half pretended like you didn't see him, and then got bumped and fell over, and it really incited a bad situation on the sidelines, and the officials had to come in and throw multiple flags, and guys were punching each other, and it was a bad looking scene for our league, and it was a bad looking scene for football in general. But I think, as sometimes happens in the media took it and ran with it a little bit. Mm. You be the judge. You Google it up and see what you think.
And I guess, Jeff, these celebrations, we laugh at them as fans. We enjoy them, and they make highlight reels, but they must impact you guys as coaches, and specifically you as a special teams coordinator, because special teams immediately follows a touchdown, whether it's an extra point attempt or a kickoff. So you're the one that's bearing the brunt of these yards, whether it's Joe Horn pulling the cell phone out of the goalpost, T.O. with a Sharpie in his sock. I mean, I interviewed Dante Fowler a couple of weeks ago when I was with the Jags, and I said, what are you going to do if you ever score a touchdown after everything you've had go on with the injuries and stuff? And he said, if I score a touchdown, he said, I'm going to take off my helmet, throw it on the floor, and jump into the crowd. And I said, they'll flag you for that. He was like, yeah, but I'm going to do it anyway because it'll be a touchdown. And I thought, well, your coach has got to deal with the aftermath.
Yeah. That's the thing. And this is the me generation of players, right? And, you're right. As the special teams coach, a guy gets in the end zone and he does something to cause the officials to throw a flag for a celebration penalty. Well, now you're putting that kickoff team out there, 15 yards back, and, you're putting your team at risk. And that's the thing that we try and talk to our players about all the time is, you can celebrate together, celebrate with one another, but do it in a fashion that's not going to hurt your football team. That's, because the game is bigger than you. And, a lot of young players don't seem to understand that. And when you see it go over the top, now you got to really do something in this league to get a penalty for celebration. Like, for example, our league encourages end zone celebrations, and they can be choreographed and they can be the whole deal. So you'll see some pretty outrageous stuff. As a matter of fact, you asked me off the phone about interesting ones that I've seen. Well, the one that incited a riot in NFL Europe. I don't know if you remember this, but Amsterdam,
yes,
when we first came back in 1994,
yep,
used a celebration after a touchdown that was, I believe, a soccer celebration somewhere, where the players all got in
a snake, like a train, and
snaked across the field, and the opposing team took offense to it, and the player went out and shoved another player, and the next thing you know, there's a big riot on the field. But there was one up here where you go to Winnipeg, and they have they're called the Blue Bombers is their nickname, and they have a small, it's like a imitation plane that drives around the field, on at halftime, and to entertain the fans. Well, I've seen guys climb in that plane and try to drive the plane around the field after a touchdown. So it can be nuts. There's, in our stadium, they had a power boat in the end zone that was on, for some promotion that they were doing. And our team scored a touchdown late in the game. This is before I was here. Scored a touchdown late in the game to win the game, and the entire team jumped in the powerboat and they pretended like they were rowing the boat. I mean, it's like you see some wacky things.
Jeff, when I was young and foolish and playing for the Kent Exiles, every practice on a Sunday morning, coach would have us behind our end zone was a hill that he would have us running sprints up and down the hill, and as players, we hated that hill because we had to do it at every practice. And then I scored a touchdown in a game, and I said to the offensive line, we all need to run to the top of the hill and just stand there with our hands on our hips, posing at the top of the hill. So we did it. I scored. We all ran to the top of the hill, and then of course all the flags are flying in the end zone. But it only affected me because I kicked the extra points anyway. So I made the extra point from 15 yards further back. But straight away, the coach was in my ear and saying exactly that. You could have hurt the team and after the celebrations. But, you know, I was young and reckless.
Yeah. I was about to tell you what, you got a little Vontaze Burfict. I took the whole team out the end zone.
I tell you what, I was knackered when I got to the top of the hill. I wish I hadn't bothered. A couple more bits of news, Jeff, just to touch on with there were some player suspensions handed down back end of last week. So Rolando McClain is going to miss 10 games for the Dallas Cowboys. They're already missing DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory for 4 games to start the year on that defense. So a big hit there. They're still waiting for Sean Lee to come back from injury as well. And Johnny Manziel, though he doesn't have a team at the moment, has a 4-game ban for substance abuse. And Jeff, I was listening to a lot of talk about Manziel and how this is, you know, this is another barrier to him re-entering the NFL. He doesn't seem like he wants to be at that stage. And somebody on an American radio station was saying, oh, yeah, maybe he goes north of the border to Canada. Who holds his rights? And I couldn't remember. Do the Tiger Cats, do your team hold the rights to Johnny Manziel?
Yes, we do.
Do you think they'd consider?
And, you know, I think certainly that they would. We consider it? Absolutely, I think we would consider it. But, you know, there are an awful lot of things that have to happen for, you know, he's got some legal issues right now that may prevent him from getting across the border. And, you know, so there's a lot of work that's going to need to be done regardless. I think it would be, to be honest with you, I think it would be in his best interest to come and play and show people that he can, you know, be mature and he can lead and he can keep himself clean and, you know, stay focused and do all those things. This league has been, traditionally, this league has been a place where a guy who has maybe had an issue here or there can come and kind of right the ship a little bit and prove to people, you know, Ricky Williams came up here during his marijuana suspension and played in Toronto. You know, it gives guys an opportunity to play and to show the people down south that, you know, that they're worth the risk again, you know. And so, you know, would we be interested? You know, again, I don't sit in those meetings, but certainly he, if you go back to his A&M days, his ability to create plays, his ability to improvise, his ability to, you know, play in this game is much more similar. You know, there's more of the zone read option up here. There's more, the wider field would suit his skill set as a, you know, as a scrambling quarterback. But again, you know, before any of that happens, he's got to get his life in order.
Well, he's going to want it as well, Jeff, because when you look at, you know, we talked about this last week, and players are, this is the time when players go away and they get a little bit of rest. But we talked about it before. I remember speaking to umpteen number of players who say, well, I do go to the beach, you know, I do go on vacation, but I'll spend the first 2 hours of every day working out, and then the rest of the day is mine. We don't see, maybe it's because we don't know what Johnny's doing, but all we keep seeing on Instagram, he turns up in Mexico, partying in Mexico, then he's somewhere else. In Vegas, I mean, it looks like he's lost a lot of weight. It doesn't look like he's in football shape. I mean, I don't know what he's doing on his mornings in Mexico, but I can tell you the impression looks like he's just living the good life.
Well, see, this again comes back down to, obviously, he's not getting good advice or getting no advice because anybody who, and I, you know, again, he's had an agent, lost an agent fired him. I mean, he's been through all of that circus too during the off season. But here's the bottom line, you know, if you're serious about being an NFL player and getting another opportunity in the NFL, you may do those things, but you certainly don't put them out there in social media. No. You don't put yourself in a position where people can, you know, take Instagram shots of you, you know, partying. I mean, that is the worst possible thing that he can do right now for his image and his, you know, reputation with general managers and personnel people around the league. What he needs is somebody to get him into, you know, a program to help him with his issues, and then also show that he can, you know, that he's serious about being a football player. And again, when you see, I've seen the pictures, and he does look like, and he never was a big guy to begin with, never had, you know, an impressive physique. And now you look at him and he looks like just some college kid on spring break. And, you know, so it just, it's really, to me, it's a sad, sad thing, because there's so much, there was so much hope and so much, you know, a lot of us thought that here's a kid that could really be a bright star in the National Football League with that skill set, but just did not seem to, it didn't seem to matter to him that, you know, you had to do, you had to work, and, you know, it didn't, it's not going to come as easy as it came when you were a college player. And some guys can never make that step. You know, it's, you know, you see it all the time, that the amount of work that is required, and they just haven't built habits that, you know, we'll see them through the rise in talent, because the higher you go in the game, the more the talent level is all the same. And, you know, so what got him by as a high school player and then a college player doesn't get you by in professional football. You know, and again, like I said, we see it all the time, every year. And then guys are out of the game, or, you know, don't have the career that, because their work habits and their study habits and their preparation habits and their lifestyle habits aren't conducive. And, you know, when the talent is all equal, it's the guy who takes care of himself. It's the Andrew Luck of the world that are the ones that are successful. You know, and it goes back to this thing that we talk about McClain. And I think this is a topic that, you know, it really, really is disappointing to me that when you see a guy like this squander so much ability.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a Cowboy, I'm not a Cowboy fan and I'm not a Cowboy hater, but you have to recognize that when you take guys on like this, and you take guys on, you know, like Greg Hardy, you're going to get these things. That's what comes with the territory. And so as the Cowboys make a, you know, a decision to bring on a guy with a troubled past and a history, well, there's no greater predictor of the future than the past. And you know, this is what you're left with, a defense now that's going to be decimated early in the season. They're going to have some huge, huge holes to fill.
Yeah, they are. And it's not just good guy versus bad guy, guy in trouble against guy not in trouble. Jeff, that work ethic you talk about is so, so real. I mean, what has happened to Josh Freeman as a quarterback? Josh Freeman had every physical tool you needed in an NFL quarterback. I sat down and interviewed him a couple of times. I've watched him in training camp. I mean, he ticks every single box. So to me, then it's you just either don't get the game mentally or you don't have that work ethic. And, you know, I've kind of heard whispers of both of those things. And then by contrast, you know, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, they're not great athletes. We've talked about that in the past. You know, they're not winning foot races, yet they're carving out careers because they work hard. And I know it's an old cliche, and I know we sound like, oh, you've got to work hard, and we sound like a couple of old fuddy-duddies, but that's the reality. The great ones in this game busted their guts year in and year out, even if they were talented. The ones that are now sitting on the outside looking in, you know, Jamarcus Russell, again, had people said that was his combine and then his pro day workout. Scouts still talk about that being the best pro day workout they've ever seen. He's not even in the NFL. It comes down to work ethic.
Yeah, and if there's so much more to it, because you get to this point and they're all very talented. I'll tell you the story of Delvin Bro, and you know, who now is one of the bright young cornerback stars in the National Football League. And Delvin came up to our game last week and spent 3 or 4 days up here with his wife, and you know, just reuniting with friends. And you know, it was great to see him. And when he was a rookie, every day, and I am not exaggerating when I say this, every day, Delvin Bro was the first kid in the meeting room with his notebook open, and he took he took copious notes. I mean, and he was every day he was in the weight room, and every day he stayed after practice and worked. And, you know, there are no guarantees in pro football. But I remember when you and I ran into the people from the Jaguars that were, you know, in the NFL office and talked about Delvin and said, you gotta go on this guy, because I'm just telling you, he's gonna be an NFL player. And he's a talented kid, but he doesn't have unbelievable measurables that jump off the chart at you. But his work habits and his commitment and his dedication to his craft and all of those things, his character, those things jump off the chart at you, and that's why he's playing at such a high level in the NFL. You know, he never played college football. Nearly broke his neck as a high school player.
Incredible.
And never played college, a down of college football. So when you think about it, he was so far behind when we got him. And, you know, he did all that in 2 years, caught up, and now is playing in the NFL.
Yeah, Delvin Bro was one of the breakout stars of last year. So let's look at let's throw a few names out for people to look out for in 2016, Jeff, as we work our way through the AFC. I mean, give us some of the names that you think could, these are guys that, you know, are going to take their game to the next level, or suddenly are going to, they showed glimpses of it in 2015 and are going to put it together consistently in 2016. Throw some names out there.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. This is really a great topic, and I thought about it as we, you know, as we prepared for the show. And the thing that, how does this happen? You know, let's discuss the breakout phenomenon. Mm. Well, there are a lot of factors that go into it, right? I mean, number one, the guy has to be physically ready to do it. He has to be, you know, at that time, you know, he has to be emotionally ready to do it. But there has to be an opportunity set for him to break out, right? And when you look at some players, and I think Derek Carr is the guy that I want to talk about. He is a guy that, to me, the Raiders are now good enough for him to become an ascending star.
Yep.
I think he's, you know, when I talk about ascending star, I'm talking about in that conversation of the best quarterbacks in the league. Right now, I don't put him up in that Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, you know, Tom Brady scenario, certainly at this point. But I think because of what Reggie McKenzie has done, I think another year in Jack Del Rio's system, another year under the same quarterback coach, another year with that good bunch of young, talented players around him, that he's poised now to jump into that next level of players at the most, you know, at the most important position in the game.
Jeff, you talk about that opportunity, and that's where, you know, I think it's about that opportunity and the right situation. So a couple of names that I had are not necessarily because these players are physically ready to take their game to a next level, but they're in different situations. So whether it's Chris Hogan, who went from the Bills to the Patriots, suddenly working with Tom Brady. What does that do for Hogan's game? Travis Benjamin is no longer in Cleveland. He's going to be working with Philip Rivers. What does that do for Travis Benjamin? And also, Carlos Williams, I think, in Buffalo, a running back who fits Rex Ryan's kind of mold and approach. You know, this is, again, if you're in the right situation, that can allow you to have a breakout year.
Absolutely, and I think when you talk about it, see, the other guy I wanted to talk about in the AFC was Sammy Watkins.
Yes.
Because I think Sammy Watkins has all of the physical tools that it takes to play as an elite-level receiver in the NFL. He can run. He's great after the catch. He can make all the catches. He's tough. Now, when you say what's going to get him to the next level, I think having another year with – you know, with the same quarterback in the same system, and, you know, they're going to lean on him and look for more big plays from him. Mm. And so I think while he may not have the catch numbers that other guys do because he doesn't play in that same kind of system, that, you know, Buffalo's going to be a run first team. And that's, I think that's a great call on the running back. But I also think that Sammy's going to make enough big plays. I'm talking about long touchdown strikes because, you know, you saw glimpses of it last year in Buffalo. You know, you saw, you know, little hints that, you know, this kid could really, really be special. And I don't think really that the Buffalo coaches really appreciate it. I think another year of being around him, they'll appreciate his unbelievable skill set, and you'll see them utilize him more.
Jeff, I think it's an indication of how many receivers are coming into the NFL as well, and also maybe an indication of how many young receivers didn't quite hit the ground running like we expected last year. Here's another few players that could break out in 2016 in my mind. Devontae Parker, the receiver at Miami, he averaged 19 yards per catch in limited action. I think Doriel Green Beckham in Tennessee, he was a 17 yards per catch young receiver. Philip Dorsett, we need to see what he can do with the Indianapolis Colts. And I know that the Chiefs still like Chris Conley. And when I was in Jacksonville, they're really excited to see what Marquise Lee can offer because he's had a couple of injury hit years. But yeah, the breakout players, there could be a lot of wide receivers, and it's either because they didn't quite get it in year one or they finally physically developed in year two.
Well, I think that's a position, Neil, that you know, when you talk about being a finished receiver, you can be a deep ball guy, and you hit on some numbers. Guys catching, you know, having 17 and 19 yards per catch averages, that indicates that they can run, that they can get up over the top of you. But to be a consistent receiver, and you're talking about an elite level receiver, you have to be able to do more than just run past people. And that takes time, learning how to get off the bump and run, the press that you very rarely see in college, but you see every week in the NFL. That's a step for a lot of guys. To be able to process, reading routes on the run, which everybody in the NFL does to a certain degree. But, you know, again, when it's interesting, when Emmanuel went from our program at SMU to the NFL, he didn't have such a steep learning curve because that's what he was taught as a college player. Most guys are in the college systems that are in vogue right now, they don't get that as a receiver. You don't do those things. Like we talked about the young kid that came out of Baylor this year, and they said that he learned how to run three routes his whole career at Baylor. Well, you get in the NFL, you're gonna have three adjustments to one route, you know, in every part of the package. So it's so much more involved. It's so many more things, so many more options. And then on top of it, you know, you're seeing way more coverages. You're seeing way more, you know, sophisticated ways to try and stop guys. So it's a growing process, and it's a learning curve. And that's a difficult position to come into the league and in 1 year just, boom, you know, blossom and show that you can do it. That's, you know, even a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. is still growing in the game as a receiver. It's incredible as his skill set is. So that's a position that I think it takes a little bit of time. But let's talk about Bortles, too. I think Bortles is ready now to take that next step. And I think, Neil, because of the fact that he's got all of those weapons around him now, and the defense will be better, and so he's not going to be playing from behind as much as he had. And, you know, it's hard to play from behind the quarterback because, you know, the defense can gang up on you. And so, you know, here's a kid that has, you know, suffered through the too many sacks, too many interceptions, and, you know, but has continued to grow. And now when you look at, you know, bringing in Kelvin Beachum and, you know, bringing in guys that can make plays for you, and that, you know, Robinson, the phenomenal young receiver we talked to at the Super Bowl, those guys, you know, I think that he's ready to now take that next step, too. And I think that Jacksonville's going to need him to take that next step.
Jeff, just going back to Derek Carr and the Raiders, I do think Oakland are going to be much better. And actually, this sounds a bit weird because Amari Cooper had 72 catches last year and he had over 1,000 yards. But I think he could be a breakout in terms of, I think this could be a 100-catch receiver. I mean, they talked in Oakland about him having the poise of a 10-year veteran. He was one of those receivers who got it from day one. And, you know, he kind of hit a rookie wall. His last four games, he only got a total of 150 yards. But I think Amari Cooper, he's going to take his game to another level. And in fact, I think that whole Raiders team is going to play at another level.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, they went through that cycle that teams have to go through now and again, where you have to retool, you have to turn over your roster, and they had a, and this is very un-Raider like. They seem to have a plan, and Reggie knew what he wanted to do, and you know, there were some short-term fixes along the way when they brought in all those veterans, but they, you know, again, they drafted well, they built well. This team is now poised, I think, to be a challenging, you know, it's a playoff caliber challenging team. And, you know, again, a lot of that's going to depend on, how much Carr continues to develop. I say when you watch him on tape, Neil, there is nothing he can't do. There's no throw he can't make. The ball comes out of his hand so fast, and he's got escapability. He's got great poise in the pocket. You know, there's so much to like about this young kid's game, and I think I agree with you. I think Amari Cooper, as he grows and takes that next step, and you know they've got young tight ends, and you know they I think the Raiders are a really interesting team to watch in this as we ramp up towards training camp.
Yeah, Derek Carr and Blake Bortles both have maturity as well, Jeff. You talk to them, you think, are they 24 or 34? That's kind of how they act. One last name, and then we'll get on to a couple of mailbag questions. I know you've got to run, but Jadeveon Clowney was the first overall pick of the Houston Texans in 2014. No sacks in 2014. 4.5 last year and 40 tackles. Does Jadeveon Clowney go on the breakout list, or is he on the hot seat list?
Well, I think he's on both, really. I think, you know, certainly when you look at his skill set and his ability, he's one of the guys that you would say that's what you want as a rush end or a rush backer in the 3-4. There are questions about that kid that run all the way back to his senior year at South Carolina about just how motivated is he to be a great player. And you know, I think as you go into your third year in the NFL, that's really now a watershed point for you in your career. Especially as a number one draft pick, because now you got to show that you are worthy of that status, and he hasn't done it yet. Now, there is an awful lot of talk here when I say here, I'm talking about in pro football circles about the fact that, and whether this is, we'll have to wait and see whether this is just information that's being put out there or it's factual, that the kid finally has grown up some,
and
really is hungry to show people that he is worth, you know, what they spent in terms of first round draft choice to draft him, and that he can be a dominant NFL pass rusher. He hasn't shown it yet, but you know he has the physical tools. But again, you know, again, how's that knee? That's the other thing, you know. That's kind of been a bugaboo in his career too, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of guys like that. You know, like you mentioned, Dante Fowler. I can't wait to see him play. Right? I mean, there's a guy with his quickness he's got Von Miller type quickness coming off that edge. And you know, again, how's he going to bounce back from that knee? So much. That's why I love the game. There's always so much to talk about. So much to hash over, you know, expectations are so high in certain places, and who's going to be that one that comes out of nowhere and surprises you, you know, that has a breakthrough. Yeah, you know, again, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but, God, just think about it, Ezekiel Elliott behind that Cowboys offensive line. That's got to be, you know, you say, man, oh, man.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, Jeff. Let's take two quick questions in the mailbag, and then we'll wrap up this week. First one comes from Tom Harold, who says, when creating a roster, how much do teams look at their division rivals against looking to just become the best team that they can? Jeff, I've spoken to coaches around the league, and I think it's real. If you take a look and see who's in your division, and you do build your roster that way. I remember Jim Caldwell telling me that Detroit wanted to draft big cornerbacks because they're in a division at the time with Brandon Marshall and Jordy Nelson. And, you know, look in the AFC East. This is a perfect example. New England have Tom Brady. What's the one weakness people think about with Tom Brady? It's pressure up the middle. Well, look what Miami have done. They've got Ndamukong Suh. Buffalo have got Marcell Dareus. The Jets have loaded up with Sheldon Richardson, Leonard Williams, and Muhammad Wilkerson. I think you do take a look at who's in your division.
Absolutely, and each division is unique, right? And so, you know, you build your roster based upon let's say you're a new GM and you come into a situation and you're in a division with the Patriots. Well, you better find a way to beat the Patriots because that's who you got to beat to win your division and get into the playoffs. And I think that you always have a look at what's the best for your overall football team, but always on an eye towards what do you need to do in your in your division. In certain divisions with great quarterbacks, you better have pass rushers. Mm. Right? If you're not going to win if you can't hit the quarterback. And in other divisions, it's where you're playing against, like in the days when the Bears were running the football and you had to be able to stop the run. And if you couldn't stop the run, you weren't going to win that division. So you have to build your team accordingly. It's whatever it takes. It's kind of our message and our mantra in pro football is whatever it takes, you got to find a way. And if that means drafting a certain guy because he gives you an opportunity or signing a free agent because he can be a threat, whatever it is, you got to find a way.
And that's how divisions take on identities, isn't it, Jeff? That's how you get the old black and blue division, the old NFC Central, or you get some divisions that look like they're track meets. That's how, because you're trying to keep up with each other and go pound for pound and blow for blow.
Absolutely. That is absolutely true. It's interesting how they sometimes swing, the divisions swing. They go from being... Say you got a division full of quarterbacks. Well, all of a sudden now you got every team in that division has an elite pass rusher because they have to find a way to get that guy on the ground. So it's interesting. That's a great question. Who sent that in?
Tom Harold.
Well, Tom, that's a great question, man. I appreciate you sending that in.
All right, one more, Jeff. This is a good question as well. Comes from Paul Ramsey, who says, why is clock management such an art, and why do some coaches get it so wrong? And then he says, not looking at you, Andy Reid.
Well, it is an art, and it's a feel thing somewhat too, right? Mm-hmm. Every just so the fans understand, every coach has a chart in the booth. They have a spotter in the booth who has a chart that tells you when to go for two, when to use your timeouts, da 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 da. A guy will typically they have one coach on the staff or even a guy that isn't a coach on the staff but is a analytics guy will be there to basically think ahead for the coach on the sideline. I have a friend that does that for the Bears. And so he's in constant contact on the phone with Foxy, and he's saying, okay, we have two timeouts left. You need to think about inside of 3 minutes, use one, whatever it is, whatever the scenario is unfolding. He does not have anything to do with calling plays or the emotion of the game or how the left tackle's playing or any of that stuff. He's solely there for information that the head coach can use to make decisions at a critical time. And that's because the old way where the head coach is trying to call the plays, and think about Andy Reid, because he really is the play caller too. Mm. You're trying to call plays, manage your team on the sideline, manage the clock, and think ahead. You have to think ahead. When you talk about clock management, you have to think scenarios ahead. If you wait until the scenario's on you, you don't have time to make a good decision. So that's why, remember our old friend Dick Curl?
Yes.
Had that job in Kansas City for a time.
He did, clock management coach.
Yeah. So I think the guys that do it have a certain feel for it, number one, and that usually comes with experience. And number two, the organization is structured in such a way that it's done, it's well thought out, and there's a guy in the booth who's in charge of it.
Well, as Paul said, Jeff, in his question, it certainly seems to be an art. Listen, we've kept you long enough. We're going to let you get off to the practice field. Who you got coming up this week? You got a game this week? I know you guys lost last week, so you're 1-1. Who you got coming up on the slate?
We got Winnipeg this week. We have to bounce back. We did not play well at all last week in any phase. And so, we've had a good week of practice and this opportunity for us to get back on the winning side. So we got work to do.
All right, we'll let you get off and do that work then, Jeff. Until next week on Inside the Huddle, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.